Okay, hi everyone. Keir Rogers, postdoc at University of Toronto. And yeah, so I think I'm also in a fortunate position where I can lean heavily on all the talks I've had over the last few days. So I want to talk about, I think in particular it's building on Julian's talk on Monday, how to make early time small scale tests of the nature of dark matter. And I would like to start with a version of a plot that Julian showed, which is a characterization of different cosmological traces by the scales and times to which they are sensitive. And I think the point is, right, that we have very good characterization of larger scale fluctuations in the universe on the left here, in particular from late time galaxy surveys and CMB surveys. We can probe small scale fluctuations, as we heard just now, in particular from weak lensing. But this is only really probing up to redshift 1. We do have this probe, the Lyman Alpha Forest, which is a very good probe of the small scale matter power spectrum because it's being sourced by low density gas. So we can model it to smaller scales than we can galaxy surveys. And we can observe that at high redshift. There's sort of an observational limit around redshifts 5 to 6, because before then, there's too much neutral hydrogen, so your spectra will be completely saturated. So what is the route to observing this kind of untested regime of the CDM paradigm? 21 centimeters coming, maybe 10 years or more until we have really the requisite amount of resolution to probe very small scales of high accuracy, maybe a trip to the moon to deal with the ionosphere or whatever. But as Julian was pointing out, we have information already from observations of high redshift galaxies from Hubble and Webb Space Telescopes. And so the other context for what I'm going to talk about is that we saw that wonderful plot originally in Tegmark, remade over many years, showing inferences of a linear matter power spectrum and how the Lambda CDM model remains the best fit to these data. It's not entirely the whole story, right? We do know that there are parameter tensions in our inference of Lambda CDM parameters given different data sets. So I'm going to quickly review some of the work that I've been doing, which is, if you want to look for these alternative dark matter models, you want to combine the information from these observations. And so in this piece of work, we wanted to take information from CMB data from Planck, galaxy clustering from the BOSS survey. Under Lambda CDM, you see the S8 discrepancies that exist. So that's marginalized posteriors on S8 and omega M. You see the CMB contours in yellow sit slightly above the red contours from BOSS. It's around a 3-sigma-ish discrepancy for that particular analysis. And one way to think about this is that S8 is probing 8 megaparsec fluctuations, smaller than to which current CMB experiments can probe. And so if you have something in the nature of a dark matter, like some population of very light scalar fields, 10 to the minus 25 EV, have 8 megaparsec de Broglie wavelength, you're going to suppress power partially at that scale and below. Of course, you can only have a subdominant fraction of the dark matter sitting in one of these light axions, but you're able to get lower values of S8 and trivially restore consistency in these data. Now, this by itself is no evidence for deviation from cold dark matter. What you then need to do, right, is check for consistency with other observations. So you can go to higher redshift, the Lyman Alpha Forest, as I discussed. This is a quick highlight of a work which we put out at the end of last year, where in fact was previously missed in analyses of the Lyman Alpha Forest. There's a 5-sigma parameter tension in the inference of the amplitude and spectral index of the matter power spectrum at redshift 3, wave number of 1 inverse megaparsec. In blue is the prediction from Planck, assuming Lambda CDM. In black is the measurement directly from the Lyman Alpha Forest. You have a significant discrepancy. And this can be explained either by some running in the primordial power spectrum, so you allow the spectral index to decrease with wave number, Or indeed, it is possible to also resolve this through a population of non-cold dark matter components. So for example, ultralight axions can also decrease and induce running in the power spectrum. For this resolution, it's a very small fraction, around 1 to 5% of the dark matter sitting in one of these very light scalar fields. This is not the SA tension. This is something different, right? Yeah, yeah. Because
when I saw your paper, it's not high sigma, you never.
But then it's because of that, right?
It's It's the tilt. It's the fact that you, Lyman-FOS is not very good at measuring the amplitude, because it's degenerate with the amount of absorption, but you get a very nice measurement of the spectral index. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I highlight these results just to motivate, you know, are these systematics or real signatures of new physics? You should, if it is new physics, you should see this signature consistently in measurements of the matter power spectrum at different epochs. So as Julian pointed out, you know, already from Hubble, we have wonderful measurements of high redshift galaxies. We now have James Webb takes these wonderful images. And already we're detecting galaxies out to very early times, high redshifts. And in particular, and in our work, we restrict ourselves to spectroscopically confirmed galaxies, so where the redshifts are confirmed by a spectra. And so we take measurements of the galaxy UV luminosity function, so the number density of galaxies as a function of redshift. This is a plot that Julian showed us. This is measurements of the UV luminosity function from Hubble. So this is the luminosity function. It's a function of magnitude. Remember, it's brighter galaxies on the left, fainter on the right, from redshifts 4 to 10. And already from Webb, we have the first estimates of the UV luminosity function up, you know, limits up to redshift 16. All the gray points are various photometric observations. And as I say, and whenever we use Webb data, we're using the red points. These are spectroscopically confirmed galaxies. Point out in particular that there's no, if you take the spectroscopically confirmed UV luminosity function, there's no discrepancy with the best fit Hubble models, right? You take these black solid lines, there's actually no discrepancy in terms of spectroscopically confirmed objects. Okay, so Julian nicely set out that one can build a parametric model that can characterize our uncertainty in how galaxies trace halos. I'm not going to go into the details of that. But if you want to actually do this to do concrete searches for new dark matter species, this relates to the point that was just made, that you have to actually calculate the nonlinear structure formation for that given dark matter model. So for this piece of work, we're looking for these ultralight axions. This is work done with a PhD student at U of T, Harrison Winch. And we did take a press-sexual approach to halo formation to calculate the halo mass function. So that's the number of halos as a function of their mass on the x-axis. And we see a number of effects. Of course, axions do not cluster below the de Broglie wavelength, so you have a suppressed population of halos below the gene scale, as you would expect. But you also get some interesting, seemingly non-trivial effects. So in particular, as we've also been saying throughout this workshop, if you have a suppression of small-scale structure, you will delay the onset of hierarchical structure formation. And what that means is that at certain scales at certain times, you can have a relative enhancement in the amount of structure when you have the presence of these axions. So that's illustrated here. This is the halo mass function in ratio to the redshift zero CDM halo mass function. If I take you on the blue one first, that's a lambda CDM model, you see hierarchical structure formation, right? At early times, there's an overabundance of small things. Over time, they merge, form heavier things, and you reach the redshift zero limit. If I put in a small contribution of axions, 5% of the dark matter, this is a mass of 10 to the minus 25 EV, you're delaying. So essentially, the red line's always catching up with the blue one. But you do, at certain epochs, from redshift 4 down, the red line sits above the blue line. So you'll have a relative overabundance of low mass objects in these axion models. Now, we generally find that this is the masses where you have this overabundance is below what we can currently see with the UV luminosity function. I pointed out because I think it's of importance for substructure constraints from the Milky Way in particular. We then feed these through to estimates of the galaxy UV luminosity function. So I just take you on the top panel here. Galaxies, the number of galaxies per unit volume, it's a function of magnitude. This is the bright end, the faint end. And you see for the range of halo masses that we can observe with Hubble and Webb at the moment, you see a more familiar story that axions will suppress the population of faint galaxies. So you see I'm increasing the amount of axions from 0 up to 30% of the dark matter. As I increase the amount of axions, I'm suppressing the faint end of this luminosity function. Just to finish, I'm going to show you preliminary results. These are not absolutely final, but hopefully will be on the archive soon. So we can use these right to scan for the mass and fraction of these axions. In particular, it's useful to combine the information with Planck CMB to anchor what the large-scale primordial fluctuations are. So these are marginalized posteriors, right, on the fraction of axions in the total dark matter, the amplitude and tilt of the primordial power spectrum. In blue is from Hubble UV luminosity function alone. You see it already sets a constraint on the fraction of axions, but it poorly constrains the primordial power spectrum. You pivot it with Planck data, and you get this very tight constraint on the amount of axions. And then you get the plot on the right. Yeah. So this is the fraction and mass of these very light axions allowed by the high redshift galaxy population. It loses sensitivity at masses around 10 to minus 21 EV. There you need to use small scale structure things like high resolution Lyman alpha forest and Milky Way substructure. But it is consistent to have a sort of fraction of 10 to 20%. Of the dark matter sitting in one of these very light axions, and in particular, that's consistent with signatures that address some of these late time resolutions that I talked about. I'll finish there, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.
You can have between 10 and 20% of the fraction of axions in one of these masses. Is it crucial that there is only one axion species that is that light, or can you subdivide it in some ways?
Yeah, so this is a good question, right? So if you had more than one ultralight axion, how does that affect structure formation? If the masses are separated enough to first order, I think the effects simply superpose. So you could imagine like a double step function in the linear matter power spectrum. So these bounds then clearly are conservative in like you have additional suppression on small scales from some another species. If the masses are close together, then from some of the simulations that are being run that you know about, you can see like non-trivial effects, right? So you can see like a decoherence in these wave effects from having two waves that are slightly different wavelengths. And so there, I wouldn't want to immediately say that these constraints apply to those scenarios.
It's more about the beginning of your talk. Like, what do you think about the E rho sigma results? Sigma SA was like even higher than that.
Even higher, yeah.
Are we becoming like the flavor and all the people that now?
Yeah. So, you know, the sigma 8 tension, what is going on, right? So the other possibility, right, is something about how we're modeling feedback in the matter power spectrum, right? So in particular, the lensing data is, like we said, very sensitive to high K matter power spectrum. And we know that if you don't correctly model the amount of feedback that is back reacting on the dark matter distribution. And so you might be smoothing out the dark matter distribution. And then the way that is, different probes then are tracing different parts of that baryonic space. And so then you might expect to see difference in different ways of probing the matter distribution in that way.